I'm Monica Taylor, and I'm very happy indeed to welcome my long-standing colleague and friend, Professor Brian Gates, to this first, sorry, third conversation with moral educators. Brian and I go back a very long way. I think it's actually 1974. So over 50 years that we've been working quite closely together at some points during this time on our common area of interest, which is moral education, religious education, values education. And we've worked through a number of organizations. I think, Brian, probably the first one was ISREV, the International Standing, what was it called? International Standing Committee on Religious Education and Values.
Correct. Yes.
And then there was,
In Birmingham and then in Schenectady, upstate New York.
yeah, and that was started by John Hull, who we probably will want to say something about later. But also mainly through the Religious Education Council in the UK, and of course our common shared interest for, oh gosh, a long while, 40 years, the Journal of Moral Education, also the Association for Moral Education, the Values Education Council in the UK, and sometimes the Asia Pacific Network for Moral Education. And of course, it has to be said, our two institutions of employment were also involved. Yours at St. Martin's, University College of St. Martin's, as it became part of the University of Lancaster, then University of Cumbria. Mine, the NFER, National Foundation for Educational Research, also got involved with our professional involvements as the background to it, and so on. So we share a very rich, complex professional relationship, don't we, Brian?
We do indeed, and I think we both learned a deal from each other, and the contacts that we've had through the different organizations that we've both been part of, and that continues.
You've kindly, following my request, Brian, sent me quite a lot of material in preparation for our conversation. And what's interesting about reading this material, as with other interlocutors, is despite our 50 years, one learns things about the other person and their professional life that were of which one had no or little inkling. I don't think it's just a lack of memory. And of course, you've mentioned because we all have to start somewhere, a bit about your personal background. And although I've known you professionally for all this time, I know bits about your private life, but personal life, but I would have said you were a very private person, really. So I think it was interesting to me. We have to begin this conversation, and the natural place is to begin with our early years, because often they're influential. And you mentioned your family life in the north of England, northwest in Morecambe, Heysham, Lancaster, and so on. And of course, the one's parents have an influence. Am I right in thinking that you have two siblings, was it?
Yes, that's correct. One male and one female. My sister is 2 years younger than I and has been based in Ann Arbor, Michigan, probably for the last 35 years
Yeah.
with her family. And my younger brother, 10 years younger, a potter by profession in terms of art teaching in a secondary school. He with his family living at some distance from Lancaster, but in North American terms, a near neighbour, only probably 60 miles away.
Yes, and you're the eldest.
Correct.
Yes, you mentioned in what you sent me that your parents, your mother, was selfless with regards to looking after the family, caring, and your father was a primary school head teacher, I think.
Yes, that's right.
And you attributed two characteristics, driving forces, if you like, of your life to these early years. And you mentioned in particular, pursuit of fairness and good cheer. Now, fairness is not surprising for a moral educator. I mean, I think I would say myself that that was a key principle for myself, right? Motivation. But the good cheer struck me as somewhat different and interesting. Would you like to say how you think you may have got that? Have I understood correctly that you attribute that to your parents, your early family life?
Yes, I think most characteristics which have been part of my life experience have been shaped from early years, and it's certainly the case that there was a sense of almost joyous happiness within the family. I would perhaps translate good cheer also to include a sense of hope and optimism, or as I have translated in perhaps more sophisticated terms, belief-full realism. All of those words, I think, are part and parcel of what I'm trying to conjure with good cheer.
So, would you have said your family background was religious and Christian in some way?
Yes, I think it's fair to use the word Christian of it. I'm not sure about the word religious, if by that there is a connotation of being particularly pious or with a strong sense of personal conversion. I don't think those would be part of what the word Christian can best be translated as meaning in my own and my family's experience. But they're once born experiences in William James's terms, rather than twice born. Yes, a strong sense of hope, a strong sense of delight at living, an awareness of how wondrous it is to live. The fact that there is life at all when there might not be.
Do you think there's any reason why that what you've just said, wondrous that there is life when there might not be, that's quite a profound thing. And I'm just wondering if there was anything that made you feel like that from the early years.
Not immediately coming into my consciousness. It's certainly the case that visits to the family farm that my dad grew up on, and just being amazed at the animals that were tended there, or walking in the Lakeland Hills, climbing in the Lakeland Hills with my dad and my sister, and eventually my brother. The amazement atop a mountain as of a sudden the clouds lift and you see a great vision of trees in the valley, of distant horizons, of animals in the fields, and of clusters of houses, and just that astonishment that it suddenly it's revealed, the cloud has lifted, and it's there when previously you were in a state of blindness. You couldn't see beyond 2 or 3 feet ahead because of the intensity of the cloud. I think it's perhaps ingredients like that that have been part of my background experience that have given shape to the context within which I find the world viewed and revealed.
Yes, well, I find that very interesting, Brian, because in one or two places you've written about crucial moments. Would you think that was what you've just described might be a crucial moment as you remember it now?
Yes, I think that's fair enough. I think that would count as such.
What I also find interesting, and I think we'll want to come back to this later on in terms of our professional relationship discussion, is that I would have said my own sense of awe and wonder was similarly rooted in the natural world because I was taken out from a very early age, as soon as I could walk, by my father in particular, but actually both parents who were country people, really, to observe and enjoy the natural world, indeed in some detail. And so I would say my own appreciation of wonder and so on was rooted there, but I wouldn't use the word that you've used twice, revealed. And I think this is a difference in our perspective on, in your case, a religious dimension, and in my case, a more, what shall we call it, naturalistic dimension that runs as a thread through our common areas of professional concern. So it's interesting that you've talked about that from the beginning.
Yes, I think I've been aware of the explicitly religious connotation of the term revelation, but I think there is a risk that explicit religious connotations can be limiting in a way that they don't need to be limiting. For instance, it is often the case that the Bible or the Quran might be talked of in terms of special revelation. Now, I'm not averse to them being referred to as special revelation, provided that that doesn't mean that they become exclusive and peculiar in a way that makes them totally discontinuous with the revelation which is there as part and parcel of everyday life, what I would call natural revelation. That they are, in my perspective, they are of a piece one with another, and have to do with the revelatory nature of human experience from start to finish.
You mentioned also earlier, which you've written about a bit, about once born and twice born. And I have to say that I'm not clear about these notions, Brian. Is it something that would be useful to explain?
Well, I'm simply invoking terms that were developed by William James in describing the varieties of religious experience. And the twice born is often interpreted or illustrated by reference to so-called conversion experiences, which some Christians undoubtedly do have, when they can say that they became Christians for the first, real Christians for the first time. They felt their lives thereafter had been totally transformed, rather than the firstborn, or sorry, the once born version of religion, where this is simply part and parcel of breathed in experience of life from earliest years and has grown naturally thereafter.
So
That's, is any clearer?
you would say you were once born in that sense. Yes. So did you go to church or some form?
Yes. This was a given part of family life.
Was it C of E, Church of England, or Met?
It was definitely Church of England in the, and Church of England in the sense that any body or everybody born anywhere in the country is born into that church and with rights of burial within the parish boundaries of any local church. And that applies to individuals whether or not they themselves are regular attenders of that local church or not.
Yes, it's interesting you make that explicit. So you, that's been a sort of inexplicit in my own background, but interesting that you may make that very explicit. Well, was there any reason for that?
No, it was just something that I took for granted
Yeah, me too.
and became articulated theologically in the course of studies in school and subsequently at university.
Because we took different paths. You studied theology and I studied philosophy.
Correct.
So that again would mean that we come at these things slightly differently. Indeed, mine was slightly a reaction to a C of E upbringing. But the is there anything you'd like to say about your early school years or school and primary and secondary years? Anything that stands out for you?
I think what stands out more than anything else was that both primary and secondary school experiences were very positive and affirmative of me, as of all the other boys and girls, pupils, students in each of the school establishments that I went to.
You had one or two particularly influential teachers, did you, or nobody in particular?
Oh yes, I can think of each of the teachers in primary years and then in secondary years subject related. I can think of each of the teachers that I had very positively and very appreciatively. But in terms of work specifically relating to beliefs and convictions, I would cite a history teacher and on the religion and belief front. Two of the specialists there on the history front, the name would be Michael Hinton, who subsequently became a head teacher of both a public school and then of a comprehensive school. He encouraged all sorts of projects, including one on Dante, I remember, and one specifically on Oliver Cromwell, that were especially powerful in my my experience at the time and my subsequent memory thereof. On the RE front, the beliefs and values front, specifically the teachers, awakened my sense of the significance of text, and that would be biblical text, and the importance of scholarship, scholarly interpretation of texts, and the extent to which that is quite that has developed quite astonishingly over the centuries.
You were obviously very bright, Brian. I use the past tense advisedly, you still are, but I mean in the sense that you went to Oxford to read theology, and then you also got did you get a scholarship to go to Oxford? You've got some scholarships afterwards to go to.
Well, I went as a commoner to St John's College, Oxford, but I did compete for a scholarship whilst there, and was given one in Oriel College on the basis of special challenge essays that I had to produce.
What were they about?
That's a good question.
Yes,
I think,
we forget what we've done.
well, yes.
But that's special to get those. I mean, not everybody gets a scholarship, right? You've got a scholarship, application scholarship, and after that, you went to the States. You've got a Fulbright travel scholarship to Berkeley Divinity School.
That's correct. And I'm enormously appreciative of the time that the 2 years that I spent in New Haven, both in terms of learning what it meant to be a US citizen and to go to political rallies on the green during election season, but more specifically, the totally different experience of higher education from what I had experienced in Oxford, in one particular setting. That is to say, in Oxford, yes, enormously important personal tutorials every week, an hour long on your own with your tutor, but a pattern of lectures, public lectures, where you would go for an hour and you would listen and you would disappear. When I got to the States, I'd go to a lecture or a presentation and I'd find within 5 minutes, one of those gathered to listen was asking a question or challenging what was actually said by the lecturer. That was something that I hadn't experienced in Oxford, and I was very taken by, and that led me to be more positive about what the nature of public education in the US must actually be like. I did have a bit of exposure to local college teaching and exchanges, and it wasn't always so consistently good quality. But a lot of it was, and I thought there was much that could be learnt in the UK from some of these ways of teaching and learning that I was finding there.
Yes, because of course that wouldn't have been common in at that stage in the UK, would it?
No, I don't think it was.
No, not in our. I mean, I'm just a few years behind you, but things wouldn't have changed greatly. And it wasn't common to have any kind of dialogue with the teacher or tutor. I mean, the tutor, yes. I mean, when I was at, I did my degree at Reading, which had wasn't originally an offshoot of Oxford, so it had the same tutorial arrangements as you mentioned for an hour each week, and one wrote a long essay and then went with another person and discussed it with the tutor, which I always found a bit of a nightmare. And my own tutor had been at Oxford, so I'm aware of the system that you mentioned, but wasn't a lot of challenge, and there certainly wasn't challenge in the classroom interacting with your teacher, or challenge in the lecture hall at university. As you say, the lecturer was there to give a lecture, might possibly invite some questions at the end, but not necessarily.
Yeah.
And then you'd go away.
Yes.
So, what you mentioned, your experience in, do you think that was common, your experience in the US at that time, or in the particular establishments?
I hesitate to say, because at that point in time I didn't have experience in other
No.
universities there.
But it seems to me, Brian, you've always had a leaning towards the US and our subsequent professional life that we'll come on to has provided opportunities, perhaps predominantly through the Association for Moral Education, to go to the States periodically, annually, and join in with what is still, even now, a largely North American, well, certainly largely based structure, structured in North American enterprise. And it always struck me that you were very happy going west in that direction, whereas I've become more happy going east, although I started off, I think, perhaps before you, going to AME since 1985. So I can see now that there's a sort of intellectual connection for you with America.
Yes, I think that's largely true, though my exposure to the life in the US did continue after my 2 years there as a student, principally because, well, yeah, principally because my sister moved there
Yeah.
in the mid-1980s, and I would seek to visit her over there regularly.
Yes.
But I did because of the nature of the program of an approach to religions in the plural and in institutional terms. I did have a I did have global horizons then. From 1969 onwards, I was a member, found a member of the CHAP Working Party on Education in World's Religions. And that did mean that we were giving as much attention to Hinduism and Buddhism as we were to Islam, Judaism, and Christianity. Now, that meant my horizon, my academic horizons were global. Yes, of course, they included North America, but North America was, in my own experience, principally Christian and Jewish. I had more exposure to the Jewish community and tradition in North America, in the US, than I had in the UK. In the UK, the Anglo-Jewry were in the 70s and 80s, principally, more self-contained and not as widely integrated in social life as they have subsequently become. That degree of integration was much more obviously there in the States, certainly in New Haven. So the relevance of what I'm saying is that yes, I was attracted to the thinking world of North America, but I w was also tuned into India and Pakistan, Sri Lanka, even though my visits there were infrequent, although culminating in the 1990s when I took a group of degree students to spend a whole term based in a village in India as part of their degree learning and as a means of broadening and deepening their understanding of principally the Hindu tradition, although in Kerala where we were, there's an equal distribution of Muslims and Christians as there is of Hindus. So yes, North America has been an attraction and continues to be an attraction, but I've also been tuned into more global horizons alongside the North American one.
Yes, certainly. I'm sure you'll want to say a bit more about that later, and I'm glad you've mentioned the important experience you gave to many students in that very special term visit to Kerala. Very creative of you. When you, so that leads us really into something that has dominated your professional life, Brian, your involvement in teacher education, or what, when you started, would have been called teacher training, I think, probably. And so when you returned from your postdoctoral study, no, it wasn't postdoctoral, was it? Because your doctorate came later. But your studies, higher education studies in the States, you then went to Cambridge, so covering both Oxbridge, to do your PGCE, postgraduate certificate.